All right, so turn in your Bibles to that chapter he was talking about, Exodus 18. And you should find that if you don't have a Bible with you this morning, you can see there's some of the chairs in front of you have Bibles underneath them, and you can find this text on page 62 in that Bible. And if you don't own a Bible, please take one of those as our gift to you this morning. All right, so I'm going to give you my top two reasons for why I love Exodus 18. I had many other reasons. We don't have time for all the reasons. I'm going to give you my top two. First, this chapter is an absolutely delightful chapter in God's story. This bit of the story is filled with a family reunion, celebration, rejoicing, joy, a possible conversion of a pagan priest, wise advice offered and received, leaders helped, and at the end of it all, a people satisfied. A people satisfied. Second reason I love this chapter is because of what it shows us. The emphasis on it shows us things. You see, so often the Bible just comes right out and tells us exactly what to do, right? We call that propositional literature. A lot of the letters in the New Testament, for example, is just Paul just going on telling you exactly what to do, very clear. But there are other bits of this story from God where he might not be that explicit. But what he'll do, and maybe this is actually more helpful at times, he shows us what to do. Doesn't explicitly tell us what to do, but he shows us what to do. He shows us what following him looks like, how faithfulness and fruitfulness work out at ground level. And I think that's exactly what's happening in this delightful chapter of the Bible. So let me give you a roadmap. If you've got a program, you can see this outline right in your program this morning. Here's our roadmap for this bit of the story. In verses 1 through 12, we are going to be shown the delight of salvation. The delight of salvation. In verses 13 to 27, we are going to be shown the duty of salvation. The duty of salvation. And at the end, in response, we will discover the delight of Jesus, who is our salvation. So, chapter 18, are you there? You got to be there. You got to be in the Bible. You got to look at this for yourself. Chapter 18, verse 1. Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian, heard about everything that God had done for Moses and for God's people Israel when Yahweh brought Israel out of Egypt. So enter Grandpa Jethro into the story. He's a pagan priest far from God. I thought about so often my very good friend, Pastor Jim, will say when we're praying, when we're talking about people, he'll say this, like, I want to be thinking about the person who's farthest from Jesus in the room. Like whether I'm teaching, maybe it's like I'm trying to connect with someone. Who's the person in the room today that's going to be farthest from Jesus? I think if Jethro was here, he would very likely be that person. He is Moses' son-in-law, or he's Moses' father-in-law. Moses is his son-in-law. He had his ear to the ground, right? Because why wouldn't he? That's what we're seeing in this text. He cares about Moses, who's been gone a long time. He's wondering how he's doing. And it's not just him that's wondering how Moses is doing. Verse 2. Now Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, had taken in Zipporah, Moses' wife, after Moses had sent her back, along with her two sons, one of whom was named Gershom, because Moses had said, I have been a resident alien in a foreign land, means foreigner, and the other Eleazar, God is my help, his name means. I named him that because he said the God of my father was my helper and rescued me from Pharaoh's sword. So you see, it's not just that Jethro cares about what's up with Moses himself, but also because whatever is going on with Moses has a direct impact on the emotions and well-being of a beloved daughter and grandsons. And we don't know how far. We don't know kind of when they were sent back, right? We don't know how far back in the story it was that they were sent back. But it was probably, my guess is that it was probably when all those signs and wonders started and Moses kind of wanted them to be safe because he wasn't quite sure how this whole battle with Pharaoh was going to play out. So probably somewhere in the neighborhood of Exodus 4 was when he sent Zipporah and the boys back to his father-in-law. But now that Jethro has actually gotten word, right? That's what it said. He heard about everything God had done. So he gets word. He knows that Moses and the people have been delivered. They're not too far off. So it makes perfect sense to orchestrate a family reunion. Verse 5. Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, along with Moses' wife and sons, came to him in the wilderness where he was camped at the mountain of God. He sent, so he's not all the way there yet, verse 6. He sent word to Moses, "I, your father-in-law Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and her two sons." Have you ever been separated from your family for a season? And then have you ever felt what that's like when you know like you're getting closer to home? I think about this when I used to travel when I worked in the corporate world and I would travel for long seasons of time. Man, when that job was done and you're on the plane, you just want to get home. Just want to see your family. And so when Moses finds out that they're there, he goes to see his father-in-law. He bows down before his father-in-law and he kisses him. And they asked each other how they had been and they went into the tent. Okay, so here's what we're about to see inside this tent. We are going to, here's what's going to be shown to us, right? We're going to see something. It's going to be shown to us. We are going to see what I believe is a masterclass in evangelism. We're going to hear about the delight bound up in salvation and the delight that comes from salvation as Moses shares with his not believing in Yahweh father-in-law. He's a priest of Midian. He's not a priest of Yahweh. And you see, this can be, an event like this can actually be even more challenging, and maybe you've experienced this in your own evangelism, right? Because it's not that Jethro doesn't believe. He believes. He believes in the wrong God. That's the problem. And like so many people in our valley, Jethro is spiritual, but he's not filled with the Holy Spirit. He's fully religious and completely lost. And don't miss what Moses shows us in verse 7. Okay, do you see it? Look at verse 7. Moses exudes respect and affection. He is reverent and warm. He bowed down and kissed him. I mean, what a lesson for us here. If you're trying to reach someone near you who is far from Jesus, maybe even a family member, this is worth imitating. Moses treats Jethro with great warmth and respect before he tells him the story of what Yahweh had done, right? It's not the other way around. You meet someone and let me kind of dump the truck of the good news on you and then kind of start being nice to you. No, he immediately treats him with respect, immediately embraces him with great affection. And then that opens up a way for him to tell a story. Can you picture them there in the tent, right? A reunion when you've been apart from someone for a long time. I just imagine lots of laughter and hugs. They're catching up on things that have been going on with each of their respective lives. The conversation is probably incredibly lively, the reunion powerful. And as they sit down with, and I picture a nice refreshing, I mean, they're out in the desert, nice refreshing drink in their hand. Maybe, you know, Zipporah lays out a wonderful charcuterie board in front of them there by the fire, right? They're inside this tent and you can see the flames and they're kind of flickering on the walls of the tent. And then what happens? Verse 8, Moses recounted to his father-in-law all that Yahweh had done to Pharaoh and the Egyptians for Israel's sake. All the hardships that confronted them on the way and how Yahweh had rescued them. In other words, brothers and sisters, don't miss what Moses is doing. He's evangelizing with Jethro. You know what that word means, right? To evangelize. It comes from euangelion. The word means good news. And so when we evangelize, what that means is we're good newsing someone. We're applying the good news to their hearts and minds and lives. Moses is sharing the good news with his father-in-law. And we don't know how long they spoke. I'm guessing it was probably at least a couple of hours because a lot had happened in Moses' life, right? He had a lot to share. I mean, how could he not be eager to share this story? And here was someone who was incredibly important to him, right? Jethro had become a father when Moses didn't have one. Jethro had taken him in when he was in exile. He had given him a calling to care for sheep. He had provided his daughter's hand in marriage to him. He had cared for his family when he was off serving Yahweh. And now here he is. And Jethro is opening up a door for Moses to share about what had happened. He's opening the door for Moses to share about who he believes in. He has come inquiring about the signs and wonders and character of Yahweh. He is curious. He's seeking. And so how could Moses not share? And so what does Moses do when this curious father-in-law, this pagan priest of Midian, is sitting with him by the fire as they drink a drink and eat some food together? What does he share? Does Moses share about, Jethro, you're not going to believe all the cool stuff I did, man. I'm telling you what, I raised a staff, the sea split. I put a staff in some water, it turned to blood. You would not believe the stuff that I've been doing. Is that what he does? Absolutely not. He shows Yahweh as the main character of his story. Moses highlights who God is and what he has done and what he is like. He shares the good news, and the good news is the story of the historic acts of salvation that God has accomplished. And over the course of hours, I mean, can you imagine this? I imagine Moses just, I kind of imagine him like me, to be honest with you, I guess. You know, getting very highly animated. He's probably sitting down when he starts and like, okay, you are not going to believe this. So we go into Egypt and then Yahweh tells me like, here's what I'm supposed to do. And I take this staff and then the water turns to blood. And then you're not going to believe that. And then there's like the dust turns into these bugs that just fly up into the, and then grasshoppers come and it's just amazing. And what does he do? He does this. He's like, he has to get up and he starts walking around the fire and the firelight is dancing off of his face. And he's just like, you would not believe, Jethro, the amazing acts of my God and how he saved us and rescued us. And we were right up against it. Against the wall and against the Red Sea, we thought, oh man, this time we're dead. And then the sea split. And there's walls of water. And we walk through these walls of water. And Jethro's just sitting there the whole time, like, I can't even believe it. I just don't believe it. Tell me more. And just think, he's telling this to a pagan priest, someone who is in the grip of darkness, the devil, and death. Someone who, had we met them and know them, we wouldn't ever think could become a Yahweh follower. Ever met a Satanist? I mean, it's kind of a nature of what's happening here. Do you have anybody in your life who you think, oh, they'll never follow Jesus? I've been praying for them for so long, I just don't see how it's possible. Anyone in your life like that? You feel that way about anyone? Look at what can happen when you get excited about who God is. Jethro rejoiced. He rejoiced over all the good things that Yahweh had done for Israel when he rescued them from the power of the Egyptians. Blessed be Yahweh, Jethro exclaimed, who rescued you from the power of Egypt and from the power of Pharaoh. He has rescued the people from under the power of Egypt. Now I know that Yahweh is greater than all gods because he did wonders when the Egyptians acted arrogantly against Israel. Okay, here's something really important when you study the Bible. You got to look for words that get repeated. Do you see a word that gets repeated here over and over again? What's that word? Take a look. Rescued. He rescued them. See, the main theme of this response from Jethro, a pagan priest, to Moses getting animated for maybe hours, talking about the greatness of who Yahweh is and what he had done in his life, the two big words in this text are, he rejoiced over the rescue of Yahweh. And that's what Moses aimed to proclaim, right? How Yahweh had rescued him, verse 8. And that's what Jethro now rejoices over, how Yahweh had rescued them, verse 9, two times, and verse 10. And this delight in salvation very likely results in a salvation, the salvation of Jethro. Have you ever thought to yourself, I'm not quite sure how to share the good news with somebody? I'm just not quite sure. How many books do you think have been written on this in the history of the church? How many video series have you seen on evangelizing your neighbor? How many programs, methods, philosophies, booklets, tracts? Here it is, quite simply. Rejoice in your salvation. Do what Paul encouraged us to do. Take note of what God has done, is doing, will do in your life. Peter says, be ready to give a hope, a defense of the hope that you have in the good news. And what that just simply means that we see from Moses here, he was excited and he shared what Yahweh had done in his life. Share that with joy. If you're not excited about it, how in the world do you think anybody else is going to be? Right? Don't people get excited about what we get excited about sometimes and passionate about what we get passionate about? I mean, at least gives them a shot, right? Then Jethro, look at what happens in verse 12. Moses' father-in-law brought a burnt offering and sacrifices to God. And then Aaron, now here's a priest of Yahweh, came with all the elders of Israel to eat a meal with Moses' father-in-law in God's presence. Now, we can't be positive that that is a conversion because it doesn't explicitly say it, but goodness, it sure looks like one, doesn't it? A confession of Yahweh's supremacy, an offering and sacrifice for sin and a longing for cleansing, and the eating of a covenant meal of celebration. That looks like a conversion, right? And it also, that meal foreshadows something we're going to do a little bit later in this service when we take a covenant meal together. So friends, let's be encouraged by this showing to us of what it looks like to delight in our salvation. And that delight in salvation is through a sharing of the good news with someone far from Jesus. One of my favorite little bits from C.S. Lewis ever was when he's writing, I think it's in Surprised by Joy, and he says, what joy needs to be complete is it needs to be shared. Right, like we know this. We know this. We're headed into football season, aren't we? A lot of spouses about to become widows for a number of months. And what happens on Sunday afternoon or Monday morning when you get together with your friends after you've watched the game the previous day? What does everybody do? They start telling about their favorite plays. Oh, man! Did you see when he, and then he just pulled that, like, oh, and that tackle when he just laid him out, right? Like, because you so enjoyed that moment, but your joy doesn't become complete until you share that joy with someone else, right? Then it just like, it kind of sinks in, it clicks in. And see, the delight that you have in your salvation will not be fully complete until you share it with someone else. That's how to complete your joy and to magnify your joy and to magnify God. But that's not all that's here. Because salvation doesn't only call forth delight, but it calls forth duty. Listen and watch closely now, verse 13. The next day, Moses sat down to judge the people, and they stood around Moses from morning until evening. When Moses' father-in-law saw everything that he was doing for them, he asked, "What is this that you're doing for the people? Why are you alone sitting as judge while all the people stand around you from morning until evening?" Moses replied to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God. Whenever they have a dispute, it comes to me, and I make a decision between one man and another. I teach them God's statutes and laws." Okay, well, that's weighty, I mean, we've seen this again and again from this people, right? They have a remarkable ability to complain and grumble to and about Moses and about Yahweh, which is crazy. So it's not a shocker to us, right, that we would now see them complaining about each other. He ate some of my manna, Moses. She stole one of our cows. That dude put way too much weight on my wagon. I do not have a suspension to handle that much weight, Moses. And he broke it. His son was flirting with my daughter. She jumped in line at the rock when I was trying to get water from the rock. I mean, we had just seen Moses in the previous story, fatigued at that battle, right? Like he got so tired holding his arms up so that they would win that he had to have a couple other people come in and support his arms. That was fatiguing to Moses. This is a whole nother level of fatigue. Man, people can wear you out. Can they not? The care and leading of this people, ensuring that they are satisfied as a family, as the people of God. You want to know something challenging? Become a leader in ministry at a church and try and satisfy everybody. To make sure that there's peace and harmony, that everybody walks out saying, I got everything that I wanted today, just what I needed. This is a perfect church. Can you imagine doing that for a congregation of hundreds of thousands? And watch, I mean, look at this now. Look at what happens next. It's an unbeliever, or maybe he is a brand new convert who brings wise counsel. So we can learn from this, right? In the common grace of God, wisdom can come from anywhere, friends. Verse 17, what you're doing is not good, said Moses' father. I love, just straight to the point, man. He just cuts to the chase. You will certainly, verse 18, wear out both yourself and these people are with you because the task is too heavy for you, Moses. You can't do it alone. Now listen to me, and I will give you some advice, and God be with you. You be the one, which I don't really know the tone that he said that in, but you know, hey, God be with you. You be the one to represent the people before God and bring their cases to him. Then, verse 20, instruct them about the statutes and laws and teach them the way to live and what they must do. Okay, mark that, underline that. That's the job of a ministry leader. Teach them the way that they're to live and what they must do. But you, for you, Moses, you should select from all the people able men, God-fearing, trustworthy, and hating dishonest prophet. Place them over the people as commanders of thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. They should judge the people at all times. Then they can bring you every major case, but they'll judge every minor case themselves. And in this way, you will lighten your load and they will bear it with you. If you do this and God so directs you, you will be able to endure. And also, all of these people will go home satisfied. Once again, books have been written, video series have been done, and here it is in one verse, in just a few verses. This is what it looks like to have a satisfied people. I mean, that is a fascinating statement and possibility to me as a pastor and elder of Grace Church, that all people in a church, in a church, could go home satisfied. I mean, isn't this a big part of what you desire when you come to church? To be satisfied? And often, I think sometimes pastors get up and go, you know, that's not why you should be coming to church. Shouldn't be coming to church to be satisfied. Well, that's actually not true. The Bible is filled with texts about your desires, about God wanting you to be happy and content and satisfied. This is just another one of them. It's not a bad thing or a wrong thing to be satisfied. The issue is, how do you get there? And what we are shown in this passage is that the pathway to satisfaction is the duty of salvation. As one commentator notes, the liberated community, right? That's what this is. This is a liberated and saved community. That's just what Moses just testified to Jethro. But that community now must develop ministries and structures that will sustain and stabilize that salvation vision in daily life and practice. In other words, the delight of salvation must lead to and produce duties that go along with salvation. Every member of the family must be involved in working out salvation so that the one or the few don't get worn out. And so that we can all go home satisfied, so we can all be at peace. And so that, right, because here's the thing, here's the cycle. All of that needs to happen so that we're satisfied and we're filled with joy and contentment so that we go out and we meet Jethro's. So that this thing can spread, that this thing can run in this valley. Do you see it? Every member of this family needs to be involved in the ministry of this family. The people of God, Duane Garrett writes, should think of themselves as a community in which every member plays his or her part. And by member, okay, so maybe you're thinking, ooh, okay, cool, skate it out of this one because I'm not officially a member of Grace Church. Uh-uh, no you haven't. Because I'm not talking about that kind of membership. I'm talking about, are you a part of the family of God? Do you believe in Jesus and do you declare him as king? And do you call this place home? If someone said, hey, where do you go to church? Do you say Grace Church? If you do, you're a member here. Just, here we go, Covenant Affirmation Sunday. Does everybody accept everybody else into membership? Say amen. 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 Okay, there you are. You're part of Grace. Do you know what is required of every member of the family? Humility. Humility. Again, Duane Garrett wisely advises us. This includes, what kind of, when I say humility, what are we talking about here? This includes the humility of realizing that my, and I'm owning my here, that my contribution to this church is not invaluable and that I am not irreplaceable. This church is not about Matthew Mielewski. Just because I'm the preacher or lead pastor or whatever. I am replaceable. It shows itself in the humility of the people who must submit their concerns and problems at times to lower officials. Right? Others just like them before they approach Moses. That's what we see, right? Can you imagine a bunch of people going, hey, whoa, time out. Like, I bought all access to Moses when I gave, you know, last week. I get to talk to him. I don't want some guy in charge of just 10. He can't be all that important if he only got 10. At least give me the guy in charge of 1,000 if I'm not getting Moses. Sometimes that we can feel that way, like just because maybe I didn't get to talk to a pastor or an elder or a deacon that I can't be served at this church. We have to realize that we all have a role in carrying the burdens of each other. Humility also shows itself in a willingness to take on a task for the good of the community, even though you might not feel that task is fun or your gift, but it just needs doing. Russ Arntz was here this week scraping mud that had been applied to walls so that it could get painted. Nobody asked Russ to do that. He did it because he saw it needed doing. I love him for that. We will not be able to have preschool Sunday classes next Sunday when we kick everything off if we don't get 3 people to volunteer and lead the preschoolers. I'm inclined to not let any Sunday classes begin until we get those 3 teachers. I don't have that power. I'm only one of the elders. But we need those teachers. Maybe you don't feel it's your gift. Jessica will train you. Won't you, Jessica? She is vigorously shaking her head yes, if you can't see Jessica. Finally, humility shows itself in the willingness to take sound advice, to take advice from another person like Moses did. Verse 24, Moses listened to his father-in-law and did everything that he said. Man. Oh, every parent, this is like your verse for your children. What are you going to do today? Everything you say. So Moses chose able men from all Israel, and he made them leaders over the people as commanders of thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. They judged the people at all times. They would bring the hard cases to Moses, but they would judge every minor case themselves. So do you see this, my family? We cannot leave the work to a lead pastor or associate pastors or to elders or deacons. We cannot leave the work, as so often happens in churches, to the 20% who are fully committed and fully giving, while 80% merely show up and receive. If that is how we operate, Jethro would be here this morning and say, what you are doing is not good. That will not work. It will not sustain itself in the long haul. Tony Marita wonderfully encourages us. Healthy communities of faith practice shared ministry by having an every member ministry. And we already, you know, you've all just been made members, so there it is. While some are appointed to leadership, right, that happens. And we see even in this text clear requirements for that kind of ministry. Every Christian has a part to play in the body of the Messiah. Every Christian is a priest, 1 Peter 2, verses 5 through 10. You, listen, you can pray for people. You can care for people. You can teach others. Every Christian has spiritual gifts to use for the good of the body, 1 Peter 4:10. Healthy communities of faith who have a shot at being a growing community of faith have active family members. That's how we're healthy. Serving, loving, giving, sharing, evangelizing, celebrating, praying. We are to be a people who do not care about our needs being met or getting some title or recognition. We are to serve in a spirit, Galatians 6:2, carrying one another's burdens and so fulfilling the law of the Messiah. But don't miss. Listen, don't separate out here. This is not about guilt or shame for you, right? This is a delight. The only way you're going to do the duties of salvation in a way that honor and glorify God is to have that anchored in a delight in your salvation. And if you go to Jessica and say, boy, I'd love to do those preschoolers because I felt really bad when Pastor Matthew said that we didn't have any. Okay, we don't want you. Jessica's like, don't say that. God loves a cheerful giver. Right? Okay, that's talking about putting money in a plate when it comes by. But that's what, and we don't pass plates. But when we pass plates, and sometimes I wasn't cheerful about that, what was I praying as I was about to put my check? God, please make me happy about this. Please make me happy about this. Please make me. So as you're calling Jessica, God, please make me happy about this. Please make me happy about this. Those kids need someone to point them to Jesus. I can do that. I don't want to right now, but I could do that. Right? That's like, why? Because you saved me, God. You saved me to tell the story of the salvation. There are little ones who need to hear the story of salvation so they can grow up strong to tell that story to others. Does that make sense? See how this works? So we need to delight in our salvation and share the good news, and that delight will lead to the duties of our salvation being fulfilled. Moses needed to learn that his main job was to represent God to the people. That's what the text tells us. To teach those around him the way to live and what they must do. And the people needed to let him be that kind of shepherd. Do you see that? That was the calling on his life. This is how Paul describes it when he picks up this wisdom and translates it in the New Covenant. He makes clear that elders and pastors are to represent God to the people, to equip the people for the work of ministry so that they can be built up into Jesus. And in that way, you will grow and work properly, Ephesians 4:11 and following, so that you can go home satisfied. I am stunned once again at the providence of God. Because I did not plan this chapter and this sermon to happen on this Sunday, the Sunday before we would kick off all of our ministries on September 7th, next Sunday. You would think like, wow, it really sounds like he orchestrated all of this to get us all to want to serve because we're kicking off ministries. Didn't do it. Wish I could take credit for it. God did it. And I think he did that because he knew what we needed to know. See, I want you guys to know something. It is very tempting for pastors and the leaders of a church, even this church, to depend on programs to desire numerical growth in both butts and budgets. It's kind of inside language for you. How's the butts and budgets going? It is so tempting. It is so tempting for us to stand before you and say, oh, look at the variety of ministry that we have to meet your needs. Come every third Thursday to the table. Take part in our education hour with all of its offerings. Join us for wayside sessions. Make sure your older kids go to Young Life and our great student ministries and your younger ones to Grace Kids. And our preacher, he's pretty passionate, kind of crazy actually, very loud. But we kind of like him. And we think all of that's going to change your life. But see, the good news demands that we actually lose ourselves. We lose ourselves and we focus everything we are and everything we have on what Yahweh has done, on his works and his wonders and his salvation, that we let our joyful good newsing shine out to our community so that pagans will irresistibly come to Jesus. Our focus must not be on programs that other people provide, but the ministry that you're going to offer to others. Every member a minister. Translating your delight in salvation into the duty of salvation. Living out for yourselves what God has directly revealed to you. And you know a major obstacle to that? A major obstacle to that is if you think this is what church is. If you think this is what church is. Oh, please don't do that. I see so many Christians compartmentalizing their lives and their faith to 75 minutes on a Sunday morning. Please don't do that. Right? We gotta live the delight of our salvation into every nook and cranny of our lives. It's the only way this will work. Right? Because that's what actually being a Christian is. It's when you're at the party a bunch of neighbors who don't know Jesus that you can't help but talk about Jesus. That you're looking for that first opportunity, that first little door to be opened up where you can slide in there. And genuinely, honestly, with respect and warm affection, share your delight in what Yahweh has done for you. That's what this table reminds us of. Brothers and sisters, worship team, would you come up? Servers, would you come up? This table shows us the delight of Jesus, who is our salvation. You see, it is here at this table that we remember his story, that he came into the world, he took on flesh, not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. He knew, Jesus knew all that God had taught in Torah. He followed all the commandments given at Sinai. He lived the life perfectly, and he did that out of delight, out of joyful obedience to his Father, and so that he might be a perfect sacrifice for all of our sins. And he laid down his life, and he rose again, so that everyone who believes on him will not perish, but have eternal life. That is the salvation that we find in Jesus. And family, I have seen that power and that rescue work out in my own life. I grew up a prideful, hardened, self-serving, self-centered young man. And it wasn't until I was in my late 20s, sitting in a service just like this, hearing a sermon being preached from Romans wash over me and realize I don't love Jesus. I want to know a lot about Jesus, but I don't love Jesus. And he broke open a hardened shell and he gave me a new heart to love him and have affections for him. And he rescued me. You guys, he rescued me. And he's in this process of changing me from an impatient man to a patient man. It's happening. Taking way longer than I thought. But it's happening. And he gives me grace and joy. And when I feel shame and guilt because I failed again, I get to go to him, this great high priest who makes confession before the Father and talks of his blood so that I receive forgiveness of that sin. That's what this table is about. It's about delighting in the salvation that's mine and that's yours, or that could be yours if it's not yours already. This moment right now, you could say, I want that. I want to be happy like that. I want to be content like that. I want to be crazy like that. And all you have to do is say yes to him. Which means, like Moses bowing down to him, saying that he's king, but it means that you're going to receive a warm embrace and all the affection that you could ever hope for. So what a fitting thing. What a fitting thing to sit down like Moses and a pagan priest did to share a meal together and to celebrate that. Yes? What a fitting thing.